Today is Monday, May 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. As support for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus outbreak grows, China says it's too soon. Plus, the latest on the arrest of Rwandan genocide suspect Felicien Kabuga.
Because of the pandemic of the coronavirus, he wasn't able to move.
And the U.S. Space Force tests a new plane.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
Those stories and more are next. As international support for an independent investigation into the origins of the coronavirus outbreak grows, China said on Monday such a move is premature. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said during a briefing that the majority of the world's nations believe the pandemic is still ongoing. A European Union drafted resolution is expected to gain overall approval this week at the World Health Assembly, the governing body of the World Health Organization. The measure calls for a probe into both how the pandemic began as well as the response to it. Trade tensions have also risen between Canberra and Beijing after Australia called for an international inquiry into the origins of the coronavirus. Reuters' David Doyle has this update.
Australia is urging China to engage in discussions to ease trade tensions after Canberra called for an international inquiry into the origins of the new coronavirus. China, accusing Australia of playing petty tricks, recently suspended beef imports from four of Australia's largest meat processors and is considering imposing hefty tariffs on barley. In an interview on Sunday, Australia's Trade Minister Simon Birmingham said he had asked for talks with his Chinese counterpart.
Now, that request has not been met, with a call being accommodated at this stage.
He said Australia was open to having that discussion, but also reserves its rights to bring a case against China at the World Trade Organization if Beijing imposes tariffs on Australian barley. Relations have been strained between Canberra and Beijing amid Australian accusations of Chinese meddling in domestic affairs and concern about what Australia sees as China's growing influence in the Pacific region. Australia insists that its call for a coronavirus inquiry, coming alongside U.S. criticism of China's handling of the outbreak, is not politically targeted at Beijing.
David Doyle reports for Reuters News. Strict COVID-19 controls in Australia are separating families of migrant workers who have been stuck overseas since its international borders were closed. Phil Mercer reports that temporary visa holders do not have the same rights to return to Australia as citizens during the pandemic.
A song for ScoMo, a colloquial term for Scott Morrison, from an American temporary visa holder. The Australian Prime Minister is being urged to let migrant workers stranded overseas return to their jobs, homes and families. Hundreds of foreign workers, including those from the US, Britain, South Africa and Brazil, had temporarily left Australia to go on holiday, to study or attend funerals, before the COVID-19 pandemic forced the government in Canberra to close the borders. They've been left stranded away from family, partners and jobs in Australia. Chloe Fletcher moved from England to Perth, but is separated from her 16-year-old son, Taylor. He was in Britain studying for exams when Australia's borders were closed and has been refused permission to rejoin his family.
For any mother to be away from the child for that long, the pain's unbearable. It's like every day, it's hard. So I don't understand what the actual boundaries are of what makes a compassionate case, because there's no actual rules or regulations, so you don't know what category you fit into.
Australia closed its borders to foreign nationals on March 20. Authorities say decisions about who's allowed to return under special circumstances are made in the interests of public health. Officials stress that shutting international borders has been one of the key factors in Australia's ability to control the spread of the coronavirus. Australian citizens and permanent visa holders are permitted to return, but face a mandatory 14-day quarantine period in a hotel paid for by the government. Australia has had about 7,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases. The vast majority of patients have recovered, but about 100 people have died from the virus. Lockdown restrictions are gradually being eased across the country. Cafes, restaurants, places of worship and schools are reopening under strict hygiene controls. But those desperate for Australia's international borders to reopen face a long and uncertain wait. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The novel coronavirus was first publicly identified in China in late December and has spread around the world, killing more than 315,000 people and infecting at least 4.7 million. Governments have instituted stay-at-home orders and encouraged those who go out in public to practice social distancing or physical distancing, as well as to wear face masks to stop the spread. Those efforts have brought economies to a halt. On Monday, Japan became the latest country to report that its economy slid into recession during the first quarter of the year, with some countries, particularly those in Europe, seeing vast progress in bringing down death tolls and the rates of new infections. Leaders are lifting restrictions. Belgium on Monday allowed markets and museums to open once more, while some students returned to schools. International travel restrictions are still in place in many areas, but popular tourist sites are also reopening, including Greece's Acropolis in Athens and the Vatican's St. Peter's Basilica. In India, a surge of new infections has led the government to extend its nationwide lockdown through the end of the month. It reported more than 5,000 new cases and 157 deaths Monday. The United States is the world's leader in the number of COVID-19 infections and deaths, with about 1.5 million confirmed cases and 90,000 deaths. It's gradually easing restrictions, albeit at a different pace in different regions. On Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump is to hold discussions with several state governors, as well as restaurant executive and industry leaders, on conditions for reopening. He also is expected to announce support for farmers and industries that are working to ensure a steady food supply during the lockdowns. Health workers have also continued to put their lives at risk in the fight to save and heal others who have been stricken by the deadly coronavirus. For the next part in our ongoing series of interviews with those on the front lines in America's hospitals and medical systems, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Rena Merritt via Zoom. She's an emergency room and surgical nurse who recently volunteered to manage other nurses and patients in a crowded COVID-19 unit at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, Florida.
I have been in that unit now for a little bit over a month, helping stabilize the unit, helping manage the flow of the unit, and helping manage the nurses, just making sure everybody's wearing proper PPE and being a support system for the staff and patients themselves.
So you were the patients too?
I'm not their primary nurse, but I do have to go into the room many times when they have questions or concerns. The truth is, the patients that are here are very scared. You're alone. They don't know what's going on. They see these astronaut-looking people going into their rooms day in and day out, and just to have them be able to connect helps them a lot.
Has it been hard for you personally to adjust to working constantly on a COVID ward?
At the beginning, I was terrified. But the fact that Jackson has given us what we need in order to feel safe has helped a lot. We always have what we need to work together and protect everybody, both the patient and the nurses. If healthcare workers do not protect themselves, we can be carriers and we can be the ones spreading this even more than what is being spread already.
Do you have enough nursing staff?
So I've been very blessed to have nurses who want to come back and work in these units because of how safe they feel. They'd rather work in a COVID unit knowing what to expect than work in a regular floor where they don't know who has COVID.
You can have great protection, but there is still so much that is unknown about COVID-19.
It's exactly what you just said. You do not know who really has COVID or not until they are swabbed and come back positive.
How have you managed to cope with all this uncertainty and trauma?
At the beginning, it was very hard for me. In the first few weeks from being in a COVID unit, I found myself just wanting to lay in bed all day. I was seeing what nurses were going through. I was seeing what patients were going through. I was seeing the hard truth of what this virus does. Nursing takes a toll on you physically, mentally, on a regular day. And now you throw in a virus that we don't know about. It's just an added stress to you. So I had to find a way to cope with it. I had to find a way to know that giving all that I can is making a difference. I would love to get back to my normal life, but until then, I am here. I'm here to fight this war, and I am proud to be part of a healthcare system that truly shows that they care about their nurses and always make sure that they feel safe in this crazy world that we're living right now.
Do you think that the public is actually grateful for everything you guys are doing?
The support that we are receiving from the community is amazing. On a daily basis, I receive multiple messages through Facebook or Instagram from people who don't even know me, just reaching out and saying, hey, thank you for helping, you know, like when a lot of us are afraid and at home, you guys are out there and you're doing everything you can for these patients.
What's your personal situation?
I have two boys. They are currently with my parents who have been taking care of them for the past month and a half. It's been very hard for them, especially for the little one. He doesn't understand why he can't come around mom or why I can't hug him or why I can't give him a kiss. So I'm very lonely right now.
What is the outlook, in your opinion, going forward?
We're projecting hopefully by June to see a drop in numbers, but that all depends on the public and how they react to the opening of certain areas in the city.
Here in New York, and I think it's also true in Miami, people are going out without masks on. That must feel almost like a personal affront.
It really is. When I'm on my way to work, I'm just astonished. I see what I'm going through and what my nurses are going through. And when I come out to the public, it just hurts. The fact that people are not taking this as serious as they should be. Due to that, we're going to see an increase in numbers. It's mandatory to wear a mask. But in my own building where I live in, people are not wearing masks. They just get into the elevators with their fellow neighbors, and I don't know what planet they're living in. The least we can do is protect one another.
Rena Merritt is a surgical nurse and associate nurse manager at a COVID-19 unit at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami, Florida. She was speaking to our own Adam Phillips in New York. And coming up later,
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
While spending more time at home during the COVID-19 pandemic, some of us may be indulging in foods that might be comforting, but at the same time aren't necessarily the healthiest either. Researchers at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, released a new study that suggests eating a meal high in saturated fats may thwart our ability to concentrate and focus on tasks at hand. The researchers compared the continuous performance test results of 51 women who ate a meal that was either high in saturated fats or one that was prepared with unsaturated fats. The test measures a person's continued attention, concentration, and reaction time over a 10-minute period. The scientists found those who ate the meal with higher saturated fats scored lower on their tests than the women who ate the one containing healthier fat content. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Rwandan genocide suspect Felicien Kabuga was arrested Saturday near Paris, France. Kabuga is accused of funding militias that massacred about 800,000 people. Earlier today, I spoke with reporter Nicolas Pinault via WhatsApp in Paris about the 84-year-old who was on the run for 26 years and who was Rwanda's most wanted man.
Yeah, as of right now, Kabuga is sitting in a jail in Paris. He's waiting maybe for his transfer to The Hague, where, you know, judges have been waiting for him for so many years. But to talk about his arrest, we know he was located in Agnières, which is a city northern Paris. And basically, the French policemen, they've been behind him for the past few months because he has 11 children. So basically, the French policemen, they were tracking each of his children. And no surprise that when he was arrested on Saturday, he was with one of his sons and he didn't try to run because, you know, he's 84 years old, and he acknowledged that he was Felicien Kabuga. So he didn't, you know, give a hard time to French policemen. And as you said, it's been 26 years. He was seen in Nairobi in Kenya. He was seen in Kinshasa and then in Austria and sometimes in Switzerland, Belgium. So he was on the move, on the run for the past 26 years. And obviously, that's something that's interesting. Because of the pandemic of the coronavirus, he wasn't able to move. And, you know, he's 84 years old. So older people, elders, they had to remain in lockdown during the lockdown measures in France. So he had to stay inside the apartment. So maybe the judges and the investigators will hold a press conference and will let us know some details. But you can guess that maybe because he was unable to move and had to stay in the apartment for maybe more than a few weeks, more than a few months, maybe that was the mistake that led to his arrest.
Do we know what is likely to be the next moves for Kabuga before being transferred over to The Hague?
Well, you're going to have a hearing in front of a judge and they're going to see if he can be transferred, because right now for Kabuga, the next step is international law, because obviously it could take a while, it could take months, even years for his transfer. We know that the French justice has been willing to transfer prisoners wanted by the international justice system. But the thing that's interesting here is that the International Court for Rwanda Crimes has ended a few years ago. So what's going to happen is that you have the UN justice system only for top fugitives, just like Kabuga, that's still going to remain in place. And it happened also with ex-Yugoslavia people. So what's probably going to happen is that he's going to be transferred to The Hague for a trial over there. And that's something, and I think that's the next step, is that Kabuga is very close to the widow of the former Rwandan president, Agathe Byarimana, and she's still living in France. And obviously, because he was so close to her and they were able to get him and had this judicial procedure against him, you have victims calling for now the same ID and the same process for the former widow. But it's a very, very long shot, because Agathe Byarimana, the widow of the former president, has been living in France for the past 30 years almost. And so far, French authorities have not been willing to extradite her.
Nicolas Pinault is a journalist based out of Paris, France, and he was speaking to me via WhatsApp. India and Bangladesh began evacuating hundreds of thousands of people as a cyclone bears down on their coasts. Experts are warning of coronavirus dangers in the cramped centers. Indian forecasters said Cyclone Amphan would reach winds of up to 230 kilometers per hour at sea before hitting the coast on Wednesday. Bangladesh officials warned it could become the worst storm to hit the region since Cyclone Sidr in November of 2007, which killed more than 3,000 people. At least 450,000 people in Bangladesh's coastal province of Barisal have been evacuated, according to an official. And in India, more than 200,000 people in low-lying areas will be moved from their homes in West Bengal by Tuesday, according to a state minister speaking to the French news agency. Forces allied with Libya's UN-supported government said on Monday they have wrested control of a key military base on the outskirts of the country's capital from their rivals trying to capture Tripoli. The develop is a heavy setback for the eastern-based forces under Commander Khalifa Haftar, who has been waging a campaign for over a year to take Tripoli from an array of militias in the west, loosely linked to the administration in the capital. The Tripoli allied forces have been trying for weeks to take the base, stepping up attacks by Turkish supply drones. The sudden shutdown of a 74-year-old Philippine broadcast network marks the Southeast Asian country's second legal action this year against a media outlet that has challenged the president, deepening worries about media freedom. Manila's National Telecommunications Commission ordered on May 5th that ABS-CBN stop operating radio and television stations in the capital, according to the network on its website. It was further ordered to take four regional stations off the air, the network also added. ABS-CBN's franchise agreement expired May 4th. During a long shutdown due to the coronavirus 19 outbreak, despite efforts by the network to get a congressional nod for renewal. For the latest development on the situation, I earlier spoke with reporter Stanley Gahete in Quezon City via Skype.
the Congress is having an ongoing hearing about the provisional franchise being pushed by different legislators and representatives. And the House of Representatives on Monday, Steve, recalled the approval of the bill granting ABS-CBN a provisional franchise to operate until October 31, 2020, unless sooner revoked or canceled. According to Representative Palma, this was due to the request of their members who wished to make some interpolations and possible amendments on the bill. He also said that anytime the House can approve this bill, but because of the insistence of our colleagues to interpolate further on the matter, he wanted to move the reconsider approval on second reading, and the motion was approved. On the other hand, Representative Rufus Rodriguez also said that the approval of the bill on second reading should be recalled due to the question of constitutionality in relation to the passage of measures in on separate days. Rodriguez referred to Article 6, Section 26 of the Constitution, which says that no bill passed by either House shall become a law unless it has passed three readings on separate days, and printed copies thereof in its final form have been distributed to its members 3 days before its passage, except when the president certifies to the necessity of its immediate enactment to meet public calamity or emergency. The NPC had apologized to the House for failure to inform lawmakers of the cease and desist order.
So if I understand you correctly, Congress is recalling its provisional license that had previously given to operate through October 31st on technical grounds?
Yes, Steve. Last Wednesday, during the second hearing in the Congress, they already approved the provisional franchise of ABS-CBN until October 31. However, today, Monday, there are some representatives who wants to recall. And finally recalled, that motion was already approved because they said that it is not constitutional, because according to some representatives, the readings that were being done in the Congress is a bit too fast.
And one last question. You know, since ABS-CBN has gone off the traditional airwaves, they've been operating through their app, through their online portals. What's been the response to those efforts in terms of people getting access to their news?
During its first day of airing in the digital, it gained 8 million views online on Facebook alone, and even nearly million in YouTube Live. Some of the provincial places and areas in the Philippines don't have much good signal. So they were so saddened by the closure of the ABS-CBN. That's why they don't have access on the typhoons and the natural disasters.
Stanley Gahete is a journalist in Quezon City, the Philippines. The U.S. Space Force launched the Boeing-built test space plane X-37B into orbit for its seventh mission on Sunday from Cape Canaveral in the state of Florida. Reuters reporter Carolyn Malone has those details.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
Rocketing into orbit with the U.S. military Space Force on Sunday, an unmanned test space plane built by Boeing, the X-37B. It's a classified mission, but Jim Chilton from Boeing Defense Space and Security was able to give some details.
It's a reusable spacecraft. It is autonomous. It flies without crew. It can be rapidly reconfigured to host a wide variety of experiments.
The mission, called America Strong, is to test power beaming, using a microwave beam to transmit solar power back to Earth. It's set to look at the effects of space radiation on crops and will also deploy a satellite into orbit. The Space Force unveiled its flag at the White House on Friday. President Donald Trump also boasted about new weaponry from the U.S. military.
We call it the super-duper missile, and I heard the other night 17 times faster than what they have right now.
Trump established Space Force as the sixth branch of the armed forces in February 2019.
Maybe your purpose on this planet isn't on this planet.
Sunday's launch blends defense and research as part of a mission the president wants to ensure American dominance in space.
That was Reuters' Carolyn Malone. You've been listening to International Edition. on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a magnificent Monday.